Welcome to Shift to Tomorrow. Now is the moment leaders throughout distribution must lift our eyes, look towards the horizon, and shift our lens from merely making it through this unprecedented uncertainty to coming out stronger on the other side. This is your moment. Are you ready? You can create your future. You own your tomorrow. And your journey of shifting to tomorrow begins now with your host, Dirk Beveridge.
All right, welcome to Shift to Tomorrow. I am Dirk Beveridge, your host, and I'm super pleased that you're joining us. We have a treat today. In this episode, you're going to meet and learn from my good friend, Monty Saltzman, who's the president of Wind Supply Acquisition Group. As you and I explore the need to shift to tomorrow in this podcast series, Monty is the first person I think about who can help us focus on thriving in the face of uncertainty. Monty's personal story that you're about to hear about his family being practically homeless as a child and how he channeled that into a lifelong pursuit of discovering and applying repeatable exercises that ensure long-term success, I have to tell you, it's both inspiring and instructional. And it's needed right now as we all look, as you and I look, to shifting towards tomorrow. So let's jump right in as Monty reminds us that now is the time to demand the best of yourself. Enjoy. Monty, thanks for being here. Guys, let me introduce Monty Saltzman to you. And I got to tell you, I'm absolutely thrilled that Monty is with us. Monty Saltzman is the president of Wind Supply Acquisition Group. And I got to tell you something. I have the most amazing respect for Monty Saltzman. As I say, Monty, I don't know anybody who over the last 3 decades, 30 plus years, has focused on studying to really understand what it takes to fulfill one's potential like you. And every time you and I talk, I get inspired, I learn and the like. And Monty, my shelves over there, does this ring a bell?
I can't quite make it out.
Sorry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You want to see mine? I've got it over on my shelf.
There you go. So Monty and I really got to know each other. I mean, real well, I guess we could say, Monty, during the 2015 Courage Classic. I think Michael Werner is actually on right now, where he got a lot of people from the plumbing industry together and go ride their bikes over Vail Pass. And I absolutely died as you and Scott Weaver and everybody else, man, over the paths. But that was a great time. And Monty, thanks for being here, bud.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation. I appreciate what you're doing for people and for the industry.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I appreciate that. So, Monty, let's, if you don't mind, talk about some beliefs you have. I know that at Wind Supply over the last 4 or 5 years, you've started this thing called the Leadership Academy. And one of the things that you have done there is you have actually created a coin that I've got up on the screen here. Can you tell the group, everybody, about this coin and the Leadership Academy? And then maybe we'll just spend some time talking about some of your thoughts on this coin. Is that all right?
Yeah, sure will. There's a little bit of a long story, so hopefully this doesn't ramble too much. But it's funny how things come to be in your life that you didn't know these things get connected. So when I was seven, actually, my family moved from California up to Oregon. Yep. And we really hit the skids financially. In fact, we became what you would probably call today homeless. We lived in tents a couple of times, lived in long-term motels. Eventually, we upgraded to a single-wide $1,500 mobile home that blew up the day we moved it. My mom got third-degree burns. And so I was living on the Oregon coast, and really, we were in dire straits as a family. And at one point, we lived in a shed, all seven of us, and we hung up sheets. And so I used to hear the stress of my parents,
yeah,
and the financial stress. And so I was always curious about, is there a way that if you do things in a repeatable way, that it would guarantee a good financial outcome? And I had, back at that time, you know, it was working class people, and we lived in the shed on my uncle's property, and my uncle actually ran the glue line of a plywood plant in Coos Bay, Oregon. So he was a little crazy. And as a seven-year-old boy, I used to play in the sand dunes. And so Uncle Bill used to tell me, you know, this desire to get rich, he would always say, you know, there's treasure buried in those sand dunes. And so I would go out and play with my Tonka trucks and my Matchbox cars, just looking for these gold coins. It turns out I never found one on the Oregon coast. But since then, I've kind of made it a lifelong pursuit to find out, are there repeatable exercises that if we do them, they're likely to ensure the long-term success of us as individuals. And that if you fill an organization with those individuals, the organization would thrive.
Yeah.
And so that's really what the coin represents is the, and again, I was the fourth out of five kids. So rather than make a lot of mistakes, I was always a really good listener and learner. I let my older siblings make the mistakes. And the coin is just me asking a lot of questions, looking at what a lot of people have done, and then pulling that all together. And so it's got really, you talked about values. It's really my, the values that that Wynn has and that I have when it comes to how do you succeed under the harshest of conditions.
Yeah.
And so I put this together about 4 years ago, probably inspired by a lot of what you were talking to us about, Dirk, with the need to change.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at that time I was the CEO or the COO of the company. So I had 600 local companies that that I was working with. And, you know, Wynn has this amazing purpose, and that is goes all the way back to 1956 of helping entrepreneurs succeed. Okay. And I had a personal mission statement of helping 1,000 people become financially free.
Wow.
And so I really wanted to challenge myself to say, okay, if somebody really pushed me to say, okay, how do you really do it? Would I be able to give them the specifics?
Yeah.
And the things that are represented on that coin are a lifetime of study going all the way back to being seven, meeting with so many people, some of the best CEOs of the country, to, you know, just an amazing group of people I've had a chance. And that's really the collective wisdom that I've been able to see over that career.
Yeah. Monty, thanks for sharing that story. Just, it's fascinating. And, it has me ask a question. Do you believe, you know, I love what you said. How do you succeed under the harshest conditions? These disciplines that we're going to talk about now, and like, do you believe from all the people that you worked with, you know, you lived in the harshest of conditions, homelessness, basically, right? Do you believe that we need to be in the harshest of conditions? Do you believe there needs to be a wolf at the door in order to motivate, stimulate individuals into action, into finding, or, I mean, we're in those situations now. So if the answer is yes, I think that's okay. But do we need something like this to move us or not?
I think it's a very individual choice.
Okay.
Because I think that people can choose to behave and prepare for harsh conditions without having to be in them. And I think that's really a choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in them now. So this will force innovation and change upon us.
Yeah.
But I think you can prepare for harsh conditions. I mean, if you look at the elite in any level of certainly sports, athletes compare for the harshest conditions possible. And rarely are we in the harshest conditions. But if you prepare for that, you're ready. And then if you don't ever achieve that, if you're not ever in the harshest conditions, then you're probably going to thrive more when you're not in those.
Yeah. So you've, how many different groups have you had in your Leadership Academy over the years?
So I've done four, and it's a total of about 100 and a little over 100 people that I've run through this. So we have about 600 people, 600, you would call them branches. We call them local companies because they're all incorporated. So I've had about, you know, roughly 16-20% of our people go through this, and the results have been amazing.
So tell us about those results.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one thing to do things that feel good, you know, right. But ultimately we all want to create better results. And in particular at Wynn is a company of owners. So, you know, our people get rewarded not for hard work, but entirely for the results they produce under their rooftop. So ultimately, this had to not only just sound and feel good, but it had to produce results. And in the four sessions that we've done, we partnered with a vendor to really take a product group and a product line to see if we could massively accelerate the growth and success of that line. So the overall results across 100 people are year over year change to the bottom line has been 30% in net earnings in 1 year.
Fantastic.
And then the most recent vendor that we did this with, and it was one of our larger vendors. And, you know, we're in a product line, plumbing and electrical that doesn't grow much faster than GDP. Yeah. And the folks that went through this grew the sales of this product line year over year, 65% in 12 months.
In 65% in 12 months.
Right.
My goodness.
And then the soft side is, I mean, and frankly, the soft side is more rewarding than anything. It's the number of people who come up to us who teach this and say, wow, I mean, this changed my life. And even better than that, Dirk, is one of the things that we key on is communication. And the specific thing that we key on in communication is the importance of listening. In fact, I believe the first act of capitalism is listening.
Let me stop you. So you believe the first act of capitalism is listening. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, I think that, you know, if we're going to demand the best of ourselves and we all have purpose here, our purpose, I believe, is that we've been gifted something special from birth.
Yep.
And it is our individual journey and responsibility to identify that, hone it, make it just as great and vibrant that skill as it possibly can be, and then go serve people with that. So, and in capitalism, we want to get rewarded for that exchange, right? I serve you. I would like to get some money for that. Yep. And I believe the first act of capitalism is listening, because if I don't know what you need, how can I put my skills in place to help you get what you need?
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, listening is very selfless. To me, it also goes with there's three things that I think at a fundamental level really drive relationships. You know, we talk about a lot in relationships in this business and kind of leave it there. But there's three major motivations that every human being has in every relationship. And those are, I want to know, do you care about me? I want to know, can you help me? And can I trust you? And it turns out that the act of listening, those are the three, and there's more to it than relationships, but those are the found. I mean, if you don't have, you know, it's like fire, you got to have three things to create fire. You have to have all three of those: uncommon caring, incredible trustworthiness, and supreme ability to help people. And if you have all three of those, then you've got the basis of an effective relationship. Well, listening, it turns out, causes people to feel all three of those.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So the coolest thing about the Academy is not only the people who've gone through it, but typically their spouses came back and said, wow, I don't know what Monty's teaching you, but you've become a much better listener.
Love it. Love it. I think my wife, Gail, would like to send me to your academy then. All right, Monty?
Yeah, I need to go over and over and over, because it's the easiest thing to forget to listen, you know?
Yeah.
It's so hard. I mean, I think about the percentage of time, really, when I'm really honest with myself and ask, how often, what percentage of my interaction am I genuinely listening to another person? Mm-hmm. It's embarrassingly low.
Yeah, yeah. But having that discipline to continue to look at yourself and remind yourself to that is absolutely wonderful. I love that. I think let's take that, right? So as we shift to tomorrow, right, I'm going to riff here just a little bit. As we shift to tomorrow, one of the things I'm going to take from you is the first act of capitalism is listening. You know, are we listening to our employees, you know, with those three criteria, as you said? Are we listening to the market with those three criteria? Are we listening to our customers with the criteria going forward? I think it's something that we can build upon from that. I appreciate it.
Dirk, I can just tell you right now, you know, with 600 locations, we are, I believe that we're probably feeling this economic downturn less than most. We have a very entrepreneurial culture. We actually have some people who are having record months, even in the month of April, who aren't selling. I mean, we're, you know, selling our product. And when we dig into what's their main focus, well, they are just passionately committed to listening to their customers.
Hmm.
So, you know, even under these conditions, in this month right now, you know, we're seeing the effectiveness of uncommon listening.
So, and Monty, so let me go there. So if you can drill down on that for a little bit more, because so the businesses around those that you just described, who's having, you know, record months, if you will, are being hit harder than the individuals who you're referring to. And you're attributing that to this listening. Is that fair?
In part. I mean, it's not just listening, but also it's listening so that you can do something, right? So do something different that serves them better. yeah. but it begins. So to me, it's the first act is to listen more thoroughly. And usually it's not just the words, you know, it's a deeper listening to really understand what a person is feeling, needing, anticipating what they might not even know they need themselves. So, you know, our folks who are out doing that are seeing great success even this month.
I love it. Thank you, Mike. So we can go. So let me ask you, let's put our two premises together, if you don't mind. You know, my premise is we've got to go beyond just leading through this pandemic crisis. We've got to lift our eyes up, look to the horizon, and start shifting to tomorrow to use this moment to come out of this crisis stronger than we went in. If we want to do that, what can I learn from this premise of the first act of capitalism is listening? What can I, should I be doing right now, not only to have a record month now, but to ensure my organization, my people come out of this stronger afterwards? Any thoughts there?
Well, I think listening really begins with self-awareness. And one of the questions that we teach people is to really evaluate, am I listening with the intent to understand or with some other intent, such as the intent to correct or the intent to, more often it's the intent to reply, right? And when you become really clear on getting super present in your intent of listening, it just changes everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I am very guilty of listening with the intent to reply or the intent to persuade or the intent to correct or make my point. I mean, that's my fundamental, you know, I've got to overcome my nature in almost every interaction.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and to learn something new, how often do we genuinely say the purpose of this interaction with this person is to learn something new about them that I didn't know?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say generally speaking, not very often. I love it.
Yeah.
So let's, I love it. Thank you, Monty. Can I pivot just a little bit? I'm looking at one side of your coin and the top of it is entrepreneurial courage. Can you tell me about entrepreneurial courage, what it is, and what we should be thinking about entrepreneurial courage now? And as you're getting ready to respond, guys, if anybody online has a question for Monty about the things we're talking about, please go ahead and put it in the questions. And the four of you, the panel, the experimenters, the mad scientists, let me know if you have something as well in either the question or the chat. So Monty, entrepreneurial courage, please.
So Win Supply, actually, that is a founding principle of Win Supply, entrepreneurial courage.
Okay.
And one of the things I think is so amazing about Win Supply is that, you know, I totally believe that it's vital to live a life of purpose. And, you know, we really don't come across a lot of people who have super clarity on their purposes and then businesses, you know, real super clarity that's something beyond something you could get out of a textbook. But Win actually had purpose before it was cool. And yeah. Back in 1956, it was this amazing group of people who started Win with no awareness of distribution and wholesale, even on their mindset. It was a group of very smart individuals who essentially started an investment club who said, we want to start an investment club with this thesis of we want to help people who have entrepreneurial courage succeed. We want to eliminate bureaucracy. We want to give them a chance at ownership. And so from the beginning, Win had this love for and deep commitment to help locally owned businesses succeed. And for the most part, we are a group of people who grew up very frankly, I'm not unique at Win Supply from where I came. You know, we're kind of a group of people who came from very, very typically, you know, meager beginnings. Huh. And we help people like that get ownership in their business.
Yeah.
And you know, starting a business or taking over a business, as you know personally, requires tremendous courage. It is very difficult to leave the safety of, hey, you know, I've got a job, it pays me X per month, I know the company's big, to going out and saying, you know what, I have to go do this for myself. I have to be an owner. I have to have control over my rooftop to run my business my way, put my team together. And, you know, it's not for the faint of heart because there are fewer guarantees when you step out like that. Now, Win Supply provides a safety net, but that's really a Win purpose from day one is entrepreneurial courage and ownership.
Yeah. Love it. Thank you. So when you think about courage today, you think about the environment that we're in right now. What role do you think courage plays as we start thinking about shifting to tomorrow, Monty?
Yeah, well, I don't think courage is the absence of fear by any means. Sometimes I think, you know, we might think that courage is, oh, you know, he never feels fear. I think courage is the ability to act in the face of fear.
Yep.
And so for us, I mean, if you think about the way that our, and you know, we've got a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm sure, on the phone, but we have 600 locations who are co-owned by an entrepreneur. So think about the fear they've got. They, you know, like every entrepreneur, if there's no revenue, if there's not revenue greater than expenses, they don't get paid, right? So they are facing fear every day.
Yeah.
But it is that combination of ownership and courage that goes together that causes the best of us to take that additional action.
Is there anything that you have found that, I received an email last week from a sales manager who was appreciative for these types of conversations that we've been having. And what he said is, you know, Dirk, he says he's found inspiration or what have you to out of these conversations when at times he's felt like going into a hole and waiting until this passes. So let's use that as a premise that you and I at times, or this sales manager or anybody on here could at times, you know, feel that urge to just, if not give up, just, you know, back off a little bit and start waiting for better times. What have you found over the years, Monty, that says, you know what, don't give in, don't.
Well, so I think it begins, I mean, I've got probably more time than we have about this, but so one of the things that we do in my class is we start with, you know, when is a company of ownership, but you can get ownership in a business and then every one of us can take extreme ownership. And I believe that most of success and most of what we do with our lives begins with taking ownership of our focus, the clarity of our lives, our purpose, those kinds of things. And so one of the things that I do in the Mastery Academy is I help people get very, very clear on this. And I would tell you, for me, it really came down. I had an amazing mentor about 20 years ago. I had a coach who had been through chemotherapy about 6 times. And the first exercise, and so this man had a very close proximity to death, right? Yeah. And so that confronting our death causes us to sort through a lot of stuff, as this crisis is probably causing a lot of us to think through what's very important.
Yeah.
So I had this amazing gentleman that I worked with, and the first exercise, Dirk, that he assigned to me was write your own obituary. And I don't know if you've ever done that or not, or if people on the phone have, but it's an amazingly powerful thing to get clarity of what you want your life to stand for.
Yeah.
And I think and that's not a one and done thing. It's something that, coming back to that multiple times, sometimes multiple times, you know, in a day, coming back to your purpose, but some exercise like that, where we take the time and realize this, you know, there's not going to be purpose landed on our lives. It's actually something we can take ownership of. We can take ownership of the purpose of our lives and get on that path.
Yeah.
And I see people who have done that, who are super clear about what they intend to do with their lives, having just an advantage when it comes to overcoming that natural momentum that we have of wanting to retreat. So that would be one. The other thing that I think is just so important is taking ownership of our network of people. Okay. And you know, for instance, how many of us have, you know, I think if you study weight loss, it's proven that your own weight is dictated by your 5 closest friends or by your best friend.
Yeah.
And it's so true of so many things in our lives, of what we achieve is a result of the people that we surround ourselves. So do we actively take ownership of saying, I'm going to have at least 1, 2, 3 people in my life, and I'm going to invite them in with this conversation that says, this is what I want to accomplish in my life. Will you be in a relationship with me to help me stay on that path? Because I know I'm going to have weak moments. I'm going to have days where I want to crawl into bed. I need to rely on you. And then I will be there for you. So that's a conversation that we rarely say, but create your network with intentionality. And you're doing this for all of us. Thank you. I mean, you are serving that role for us. And but having people intentionally in your network that remind you and say, Dirk, you said you wanted to do this. Yeah. You said it was important to you. I know you want to sit there. And I get it. It's how it feels.
Yeah.
But do you really want this? And now is the time where I'm going to challenge you, and I'm not going to go soft on you. You told me not to. So, you know, we all need that kind of help.
Well, I love it, Marty. Thank you. Hey, Tyson, if you want to try to turn on your video, let's give this first experiment a try here. Tyson has a question for you, Monty, and we'll see if he can sign on here. And as Tyson's doing it, Steve, I see that you do as well. So whoever signs on their video first might get a chance at Steve, at Monty here, all right? But so let me see. Okay, so I'm not sure they're going to get on here. So can I ask? I'll ask for Tyson's question for you. Here comes somebody. Hey, Steve. Steve Stricker from Gray Bar. Why don't you go ahead real quick, Steve, and ask Monty your question, if you don't mind.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you, Steve? I'm expecting an electrifying question from an electrical wholesaler.
Oh, man. Put me on the spot. you've hit on listening and being a great advocate for that, which is a great focus that we all need to do better. Is there anything that you and or Wynn is doing today to even enhance that more with your teams, to give them a platform to speak, especially when they do have concerns and fears, and being able to be that sounding board for them?
Well, I think that, you know, we've got our equivalent of a regional staff, which I'm sure you do too. We call them area leaders. And so, you know, a big part of what they do, and we're coaching them, they're essentially business coaches. And a big part of what we ask them to do is just check in on people and say, hey, how are you doing? You know, so, I mean, it's nothing super formal, but really trying to put heart into this to ask that not how is the business first, but how are you? How is your family? Cool. And, you know, I think modeling that internally then kind of creates this momentum of this that goes out into the broader group of people that we touch.
Good. Okay. Steve, thank you, buddy. Thanks. And then Monty, real quick here, and I'll ask the question. And guys, we're going to have to be signing off with Monty here in just about 3 minutes or so. So would you do me a favor? Would you put your questions, you know, your thanks for Monty and what you thought about what Monty shared with you? I'd really appreciate that. But Tyson asked here, Monty, what is Monty's biggest takeaway from the current crisis, and how is he moving forward with this takeaway?
So my takeaway is years ago, I had, this is probably 1996, Dirk. I happened to be at Platt Electric Supply, okay. And Cutler Hammer had just purchased Westinghouse, which was a small company buying a big one. And I happened to meet a man named Sandy Cutler, one of my very early mentors. He was the CEO of Cutler Hammer, super dynamic guy, just yep. Amazing. And so here's a smallish company buying a big behemoth in Westinghouse. And I had a chance, you know, at a very young age to ask and talk to Sandy about change. And I've always remembered what he said. And he said, you know, in times of massive change, okay. As leaders, we absolutely need to tell people what's going to change. But this was the piece that I've always remembered. And, you know, everybody knows that. And this is the piece that I loved. That was new to me. He said, here's what I've learned. I also have to tell people what won't change.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the piece that is hard, because how many of us know what won't change? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what won't change, but I do know this. As you study human existence for millennia,
yeah,
one thing that has not changed throughout all the crises, and humankind has endured many crises. What we know is that human beings still respond to essentially the golden rule, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated. And that has survived. It's part of every religious and ethical text ever written.
Yep.
It's a millennia old concept. And so, I mean, essentially, when we talk about, and distribution to me is the ultimate people business. I think technology is going to change our the role, but man, I hope that people emerge even better, and there's more heart in this business than ever. And so you know, we need more great people doing more great things, showing up and showing uncommon caring, being amazingly trustworthy, being the ability to serve and help people. And I don't think that will change. So to me, that's the thing that I hold on to say, yeah, a lot's going to change. But the essence of relationships, I don't see that changing currently. Boy. And we can all do better at that.
I appreciate that. You know, one of the things Jeff Bezos says, just like you said, is he says, everybody asks what's going to change. Few people ask what's not going to change. And you can build a strategy around what's not going to change. And maybe, just like you said, you know, if we believe that that golden rule has lived, right, for time immemorial, can we build our personal and our company strategy around that in moments of crisis? I think it's a great, great insight. Monty, I want to say thank you so very much. You and I, even when you said entrepreneurial courage, you've got a lot more there and the like. And guys, so you know who the type of person Monty is. Monty and I were on the phone talking about coming on Sunday. And I said, Monty, I got to tell you something. I'm going to expand my ask of you. And I asked Monty if he would come back for one of our deep dive Wednesday conversations. So guys, I want you to know, I think it's May 6th, the third Wednesday from now, Monty's going to be back with us for an entire hour from 3 to 4. And we've titled this A Playbook for Thriving Today. As Monty and I were talking, I said, you know, there's no playbook for this. And Monty stopped me and said, Dirk, I think there is a playbook for this. And so we talked about that, and Monty's going to come back and share with us for an hour, this playbook for thriving today. Monty, I got to tell you something, man, as always, you educate, you inspire, you give of yourself. And for that, I'm deeply, deeply grateful.
Well, Dirk, it's been my pleasure to be part of this. I got to tell you, so if it hadn't been for this, I would be on the river right now with a fly rod in my hand. You know, one of the things we do need to do is recreate during this time. It is prime bass catching time right now. So yeah. I care about you deeply, man.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Continue your shift to tomorrow by visiting us at unleashwd.com to access free resources, including additional podcasts, white papers, webinars, and our weekly newsletter, Unleash Your Week. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd also appreciate you reviewing our show with a 5-star review in the Apple Podcast app. Until next time, keep your eyes on the horizon, keep innovating, and shift to tomorrow.